by the President's Advisory Committee and the Status of Women.
Okay.
I'm the chair of PACSOL. Stella and I, thank you all for coming today. Now, I feel fortunate, as I'm sure many of you do, that here at UC we work with so many women that we admire, and one of them is our own colleague, Mary Krogan, who will be officially introducing our speaker today.
Thank you, Stella. So it gives me great pleasure and honor to introduce Josie to all of you. And I want to give you a little bit of my personal experience with Josie, which is what makes it such a pleasure and an honor to get to do her introduction. So Josie's, by definition and degree, a lawyer. We have lots of lawyers in the building, but she went a different direction from most others. She actually was a professor of law, criminal justice, and worked at the JFK and at Berkeley. And then from there, becoming a university president. So again, a little similar to somebody we have up on the 12th floor, law and presidency of a university. But then Josie got really smart and decided she'd help others, and particularly people of minority backgrounds, underrepresented minorities, and women, to help them with their career development. And this is where the personal connection with Josie really comes in. I saw their Executive Leadership Academy program for UC Berkeley, Josie having been the founder and the director of that program, running it with Jed King, who many of you know, who used to be our system-wide provost here and also on the 12th floor. And Josie just does an incredible job with that program. And I also just learned, sitting here with her, they had two people who were not going to be able to attend. And therefore, the pamphlet that you see on your chair can that program can take two more people, which is this month.
Next week.
You can really get your act together. I would be happy to tell you more about it personally because I did it last year. But the Executive Leadership Academy is focused on executive leadership for people at all levels, ideally, though, kind of at senior management and above. But the focus is really to bring in diversity and have us thinking about it every moment of every day and what we do in terms of leadership. And that's what makes this program really unique over Harvard or over the American Council on Education or other programs that exist in the U.S., because Josie's been able to actually formalize that and make it part of the curriculum and the tone and the tenor. So you spend 6 days immersed in that and having it at the forefront of your mind throughout the whole program. So you do have a pamphlet in front of you. I'd be happy to answer questions if anybody's thinking about doing it. I would obviously wholeheartedly recommend it. And Josie's going to talk a little bit more about her own history and about executive leadership training as she speaks today on the wonders of executive leadership programs. Thank you, Josie.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you very much. I'm used to walking around, so please forgive me as I just continue to walk around. And I tease the ladies that were in the back. I said, you know, because I'm so used to teaching, I will always call. Whoever's sitting in the back row will be the first individual that I call on. I would like to, if it's all right with you, hold off on questions until after I finish my prepared remarks. And I will allow lots of time for questions, so there's not a problem. When you do ask a question, I think the protocol here is that you would please introduce yourself and where you're from or what office you're in, so that way everyone knows. My understanding is that there are people on the telephone and quite a few. So for those of you that are on the telephone, buenos dias, buenos dias. I'm really honored and pleasured to be here today, and I want to really thank you for inviting me. This is, for me, very historic. This is the first time, and I've been with the University of California, Berkeley, for close to 30 years. And as I talk about the wonders of executive leadership programs, I'm not just going to focus on Berkeley's program. I'm going to focus on the entire gamut of programs that I personally recommend throughout the country, national programs. And as I talk to you, please understand that even though Spanish was my first tongue, I will trust me, I'll only speak in English except for a few words. My buenos días, ¿cómo estás? Es un placer estar con ustedes. Good day, good morning. A pleasure to be with you today. I want to give a special acknowledgement to Mary and to Luana who made it possible for me to be here. I have, as you can imagine, a very heavy travel schedule. And so they were very persistent and very supportive of my schedule. So thank you very much. Thank you for making it happen. I also want to give a special acknowledgement to many of you that as I talked this morning for my formal remarks, You've been with me from the beginning, when I started Berkeley back in 1980, and you've traveled with me throughout my journey. And some of you, I think I will have seen recently in Sacramento or in Washington, D.C., where I just came back from, and it's always a pleasure to see old friends again. And, of course, Judy and I go way back as well. But I guess we'll start off this morning by saying, let me thank my husband, Carlos, who's here in the front row, and my daughter, Charisma. You know, ordinarily when I go over the country to give remarks, my family doesn't travel with me, and so they don't get the benefit of hearing the jokes that I share about myself. And so my husband this morning said, honey, I'll take you. I said, oh, okay. So I'll be very circumspect about any jokes that I say, but I'll be, try my best. And Charisma is my eldest, our firstborn, and there are two other daughters, Diana, who many of you already know. She's an event planner at UC Berkeley. And then Alexa, who is a young attorney, as they say, a newly minted attorney who practices law in Wisconsin. And so as I talk about my journey and how I was able to make it happen in terms of a career and have a family, I know you can appreciate the pride you hear in my voice for my three daughters because, you know, they traveled along with me, along with my husband, as I went from place to place. And the reason I want to share this with you is because I was sitting where you were sitting after many, many years at Berkeley and thought to myself, after 18 years, my first go around, if I leave Berkeley, oh my God, the earth is going to swallow me up and I'll never be able to come back. Well, guess what? I'm reincarnated here. I'm back after 12 years being away from Berkeley. So not that I want to encourage all of you to run out and apply for the position, but I'm just telling you that if something comes along and you go to one of these leadership programs in the country and you decide that it's time for you and your family to make it, you know, a nice transition, then I'm here to tell you that it is possible to come back. I think some of the people at the center where I work with Jed King call us retreads because we've done early retirements and then we come back. I prefer recall or reincarnation, transformation, you know, whatever, you know, we are, but it's a joy. And so I really want to just share with you that I am a third-generation Hispanic American. Now, I'm doing that for my mother. My mother is very proud of being Hispanic American. I actually taught in Chicano studies at UC Berkeley for many, many years, and I'm proud to say I'm a Chicana from California, and I'm okay with that. But as I go throughout the country, they go, Hispanic American, Josefina, well, they're done. No, I go, okay, fine. So you can call me Latina. I often go by Latina. My husband's a Latino, originally from Nicaragua. And so our daughters, we often say, are Chicanicas. Isn't that true, Kirsten? That's how you're raised, that's Chicanicas. But going back to my heritage, so first born of nine children in Wisconsin. And my parents were from Texas. And they moved from Texas because they thought to themselves, we hear that in Wisconsin, it's a little bit colder than Texas, but they have wonderful opportunities for education. And so that's why they went to Wisconsin, for better opportunities for education. So that's where I was raised. And later on, I ended up being a university president in Wisconsin. You will not wonder anymore. Why would she go to Wisconsin? Now you know. Tenets of what I like to say with all of you is that I firmly believe that the support of our families is really important as we continue to climb up the corporate ladder, in this case, the academic ladder. And by the way, a special warm welcome to you gentlemen that are in the audience. I had heard that there might be some gentlemen with us this morning, and so my remarks will also be applicable to you as well. On occasion, because I'm such a, if you look at my profile, you'll see that I am actually known as a real advocate for women, mujeres adelante, as they say. But I also work very closely with a lot of men who have been both mentors and who I've mentored. And now that I also serve as an executive coach when I'm not working at UC Berkeley, quite a few of my clients are men and they're doing great. Thank you very much. So, it's okay. Mary has already talked to you a little bit about the third Executive Leadership Academy that we are ready to again host at Berkeley in 2 weeks. Next Monday. And you'll wonder, why Berkeley? Why this program? Well, that is what I really want to focus on today. The wonders of executive leadership programs. Why you should engage in one of these programs. And there are lots of programs. You're talking about Harvard. You're talking about the Millennium. been talking about all the wonderful leadership programs that the American Council on Education sponsors. You're talking about the HERS program. How many of you here have gone to the HERS program? Anyone? I recommend them highly. I'm on the board, and I'm on the faculty. I serve as a faculty member for the HERS programs. We have one in Bryn Mawr, one in Wellesley, and one in Denver, 12-day program. This is just for women. But the ACE programs, which I'm also on the board of, and I'm also a faculty member, are for everyone, men and women. So look up the ACE on the online, and Mary's the ACE fellow, and she can talk to you about that program. I recommend that as well. The Millennium Program is another wonderful program that was started by a group of African-American presidents who decided that in order to move the needle, and I'm going to talk to you about what the needle means in a minute, that they were going to start programs for individuals that were ready for presidencies, and they've had tremendous success. So I'd also recommend you look up the Millennium online. And, of course, the Harvard programs. I've gone through three of them. How many of you here have gone through the Harvard program? Raise your hand. And see, and next time around, there'll be more hands that go up. They have wonderful programs. Now, you probably guess by now, you'll say, well, Chris doesn't say all the programs are wonderful. That's true. I will. I'm not here to say one program is better than the other. But I am here to tell you, though, that when I started to think about what the programs that I had been through, and been through most of them, something missing in these programs. And that's why the Executive Leadership Academy was born. That meaning multicultural competencies. How do we lead in these tremendous period of change? How do we do it? And so Jack King and I decided that it was time to create a program that would focus on not only learning the executive leadership skills that you need to move forward, but to do it within the context of a program where you would say, okay, when it comes to budget, how do you plan for a budget that protects equity and access? How do you plan for risk management? When you're dealing with student demonstrations and you're dealing with a lot of passion and a lot of students that are having some, you know, challenges and issues, and so on and so forth, this particular program was created around, like Mary was saying, the lens that we look at in terms of multicultural competencies is very important as we're going forward to lead in today's institutions. You know, I often ask myself, how did I end up at Berkeley? After graduating from Hastings College of the Law, how did I end up at Berkeley? My husband, he said, you loved being in, when you were in at Hastings, I was in the financial aid office in Wisconsin, I worked in the admissions office, and I really loved administration. And he said, you should look at Berkeley. The first time I applied for a position at Berkeley was in the financial aid office. And they looked at me and they said, excuse me, if we hire you as a counselor in financial aid at Berkeley here, you won't stay. You have a law degree from Hastings. First chance you get, you'll leave. Well, so I said, okay, then I'm going to keep looking because my husband's right. I want to try to work at Berkeley because I love education and I like the environment. Finally, after many attempts, 1980, Michelle Woods, I don't know if you know her, Michelle Woods took a chance on me. She took a chance. She said, I like you. You have something to offer. Gloria Burkhalter Simmons was on the committee, said, I like you too. I think you'll stick around. You're right. 18 years I stuck around. And during that time, I followed my passion. The passion that I had was I was a student at the University of Wisconsin, which was all about social justice, equity, access, and promoting diversity. Everywhere I went, that was a big issue for me. Because as a Latina, Chicana, Hispanic American, whatever you want to call me, I'm going to tell you right now, I knew that women and people of color needed support, they needed additional help, and whatever I could do to promote social justice, equity, and access, that was going to be the mission that I would pursue in life. And I've been fairly consistent. So I started out as an EOPA coordinator. I went on to continue on that track until one day they said to me, how about student support services? Would you like to run that program? I said, well, sure. You have to write some grants. I said, I've never written a grant in my life. I said, oh, sure. And I really believe you. You have to be able to just take on whatever chance you get, you take on a risk or risk taking on a new opportunity and to make it work. If you feel it's your passion, I encourage that. One day, the chancellor's office briefly called me and said, you know, Berkeley's tried over and over to get a McNair grant. For whatever reason, we can't get it. We've tried over and over. We're wondering, does you already have an SSS grant? You've been successful. Can you help us get a McNair grant? So I study it. My advice to you is study situations, analyze them, print them. Why was Berkeley turned down twice? Let me think about this. Aha! I know why. It didn't have strong faculty involvement. So I went one day, and in my, you're not, my hope is you remember this story. Whatever I tell you, written remark, remember this story. So how am I going to get strong faculty involvement at Berkeley? Aha, Mary will understand. I'm going to go to the chair of the Faculty Senate. I stood outside the door of the Faculty Senate. Now, I taught as a visiting professor, started out as a lecturer, instructed as a visiting professor. But initially, I was not teaching. I was an administrator for TRIO program. That's how I came up the ranks. Out of the door, Arnie Lyman. Professor Arnie Lyman walked out of the door. Some of you know him. And I pulled on his sleeve. Professor. He says, excuse me, do I know you? I said, no, you don't, but you will. I said, I really want us to have a McNair program, and I need your help. And he said, all right, well, can I have my sleep back? I was nervous. I admit it. I was nervous. I said, Professor Lyman, if you reach out to the faculty at Berkeley, they will listen to you. Then we can create a faculty advisory board, and you can chair it. We can put that into the grant, and we can get this grant. I think he was so thrown off. And by the way, goes full circle. Ends up that Arnie Lyman was best friends with Jed King. And that's why I'm now Jed King is the senator. You never know about life, right? And so we applied for the grant. We got the grant. McNair program at Berkeley went on to become the largest, the program that was funded with the most money. Of all the McNair programs in the country, Berkeley got the most money. On to create, create journals, undergraduate research journals. The other programs in throughout the country emulated our undergraduate research journals for our McNair program. So when I was there as a director, I think we published 7 McNair journals. And that was thanks to Arnie Lyman and the faculty that worked with our students. So, I say to you, sometimes it's okay to take a risk. In fact, most of the times you have to take a risk. And go out of your comfort zone. Because if you stay within your comfort zone, I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to move. You've got to sometimes do that. So the McNair program went on to become the national chair for the McNair program because it wasn't enough. And one year, remember Walter Massey in the office of the president? One year, we were all excited because they're going to go off to Morehouse to be their president. Remember that? Well, the first thing he discovered was that Morehouse had lost their grant for McNair. That was the national chair, volunteer position at the time, and they asked me, Walter Massey is coming to be our new president of Morehouse, and we lost the McNair grant. Can you help us? I said, well, sure, I'd never done that before either. So I went to appeal. I sat on Washington, D.C.'s doorstep almost every day. Blanca Rosa Rodriguez was there. I would call them. I would write letters. I would have never been in the country. How could they take away Morehouse's money like that? Finally, Washington, D.C. gave Morehouse back their money. And they said, Josie, do me a favor. If you ever lose your grant again, could you get somebody else to take on the national chair role? Because I don't think we can take your calls every day. My point is this, that sometimes when you believe in something, it does mean making a lot of calls. It does mean, you know, staying up 24/7 to get it done. It means you take a chance. It means you take a risk. It means you're going to make some people uncomfortable. And when you're dealing with issues of social justice, equity, and access, it's not going to be comfortable for everyone. Some people are going to feel discomfort. Some people are going to say, why me? Why you? Why not? And what are you going to say? Why not? Exactly. You're going to say, why not? And that's been sort of the mission of my life. If not me, remember what John Kennedy said? Who remembers that? Yes. What did John Kennedy say?
Not me, who?
That's right.
Not now, when?
That's right. Exactly. And I guess my proposal to all of you, you wouldn't be in this room right now unless you felt that it's time. I don't know what your situation is. I don't know what you're planning on doing. I don't know where you're planning on, whose door you're going to knock on. But it is definitely your time. Your time to go for it.
Otherwise, you never would have invited me, would you?
All right, then. 18 years went by. Fast track. One day, and this is after being, I'm going to encourage all of you to do this as I go through some of these things. One day, a good friend and colleague, Jan Holmgren from Mills College, I was on her board for 9.5 years, said to me, Josie, it's time for you to run your own shop. And I said, what does that mean, run my own shop? She said, you are a little baby fish in a big pond at Berkeley. In order for you to go forward to become a university president, you are going to have to leave the big pond to be a baby fish, so you can be a big fish in a little pond. And I said, oh, no, I can't remember. Okay. Said, yes, you can, and you will, and you have to. And so one day, at Chancellor Burdell's inaugural, a good friend of hers, Charles Glasser, John F. Kennedy University, ran into me, and Jan had already told him that it was important that he talk to me because I really enjoyed raising money. I love it. Love raising money. Perfect cost, of course. And so he said, Josie, what's it going to take to get you to leave Berkeley to come help me raise $10 million for a new building for JFK? I said, hey, Berkeley, what would it take? Oh, I don't know. True story. I said, well, let me see. By that time I did my analysis, I knew that I had to have a line position to move forward. I knew that I had to have some experiences that would help me as I wanted to go up that career ladder. And so I thought about it, and I said, well, I understand your deanship and your school of management is open. Is it true? It is. I'd like to be your dean for the school of management. If you're taught business law, I said no, but I could learn. He goes, all right, I'll make you professor in the school of management, dean for the school of management. He says, but so you've taught long-term legal justice there. I said, yes. He says, okay, I'll make you a professor in the school of law as well. Big announcement. He did it. And then he says, was there anything else? I said, well, you know, I really love research. Undergraduate research is really my passion for my students. He says, well, what else would you like? I said, I'd like to be vice president for research. He said, okay, let me hear PRG right. You want to be dean of the school of management. You want to be vice president for research. Professor in the School of Management, and of course, professor in the School of Law. And I said, well, you added the School of Law thing. And he said, done. To this day, the most beautiful write-up came out on me. My mother even cried over it. She goes, my God, how'd you do all that? I don't know. Sorry. At any rate, so after 18 years at Berkeley, I finished Berkeley on a Friday, and I started JFK on Monday. That was it. That's where I went off to go off and do these wonderful, wonderful things that I was able to do. From there, I went on to Alliant International University, becoming their executive vice president for strategic planning and advancement. There, I went on to become president of Marion. At the time, it was college. The sisters recruited me along with the board to turn them into a university. So you're all wondering, where is it's a beautiful, small Ivan liberal arts college in Wisconsin, close to my mother and close to, remember, actually I was the first born of 9 children, so it was also close to 6 other brothers and sisters and their family. So for me, it made a lot of sense. At the time, I was also a finalist for one of the chancellorships of the University of Wisconsin. I'm going to go there no matter what. I graduated from the University of Wisconsin, so it all didn't work out. And the sisters just said, listen, here's what we need. We need to have you turn this into a university. We need a new strategic plan. We need a new campus plan. How long do you think it'll take you to do that? And I said, true story, 3 years. 3 years. I did. 3 years. We did it together with everybody there. When it came time for them to think about a new contract, they were looking at a 5-year contract. Discussions were going on. I said, oh, no, I got to go back to California. And my husband, he stayed here waiting for me twice, patiently, because he knew, he's an equator baby. He said, from Nicaragua, he said, if I go to Wisconsin with her, she'll never come back here. And he was right, we'd still be there. So back we came. At any rate, so the question then is, preparation. How does, you know, how do you prepare to do all these things? And let me tell you, my three professional career guideposts really helped me as I prepared for all these things. One also leads with a clarity of head and a purity of heart. Because you'll know. People always listen to your heart. But how do you listen to your heart? You have to have a clarity of head. Your mind has to be clear on what's important to you. What is your value system? What are your core values? What do you really care about? For me, it's been easy. Social justice, equity, parity, access. So everything that the themes that I've followed throughout my entire career have focused on just that. Even with the sisters, what drew me to the congregation? My big passion was stopping human trafficking. And that's what I was teaching in my law class in Chicago Studies, how to stop human trafficking, some of the research topics. That's what drew me to them. There's always going to be a call for you, a calling in terms of what's calling out to you that's really important to you. Before, be not afraid. Guidepost number career, guidepost number two. Be not afraid. Take risks. Assess your own leadership skills. I'm going to make it easy for you. That brochure that was on your
I'm
chair.
Listening to my sister's presentation. Oh, okay. Did you collect the money from the girl?
For those of you listening in on ReadyTalk, can you mute your telephone, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Mary's in charge. I hate to be the bad guy. Oh, or bad girl. Okay. Anyway, take a look at this leading with long-term vision. See all these skills here? Strategic planning, faculty recruitment, implementing, evolving leadership models, fundraising, governing board relations, you name it. They're all in there. I made your job easy this morning. Those are executive leadership skills that you need to always be thinking about in terms of development of your career. And that will help you because as you assess your skills, then you think, okay, what do I have now? What do I not have? And if you identify, circle the ones you don't have right now, then figure out a way to engage in some leadership program that will teach you some of these skills. And start with your own environment. So, for example, take me. When I started at Berkeley, I didn't know how to raise money. I went to my boss and said, I'd like to learn how to raise money. He said, oh, well, that's my job. I said, okay. So I went to Michael Hayman at the time, who was the chancellor. And I said, I really want to learn how to raise money. Can you help underwrite my salary for a year? This was back in 1984. I had only been at Berkeley for a few years. But all I knew is I wanted to be a department head, and if I had to learn how to raise money to do it, then I was going to have to figure out how to do it. Michael Hayman was really good. He said, okay, you can go work with, who's going to teach you? And I said, well, the brand new vice chancellor for development, who just came here, Kurt Simic. First ever campaign in Berkeley. Our goal was $300 million, first ever. We're now going to be ready to finish up our third campaign. So Michael Hayman thought I had a lot of the spot. He thought, this girl has guts. I said, I want to be just like you. He goes, okay, send you off to development. You learn how to raise money, which I did under Kurt Simic. So I've been trained as a professional fundraiser by Berkeley. That's my background. When I came back to my department, another true story, my department chair, a wonderful man that he is, he said, well, you know, Josie, that's sort of my job, though. I know you have this new skill. I don't know how we're going to take care of that. I said, I don't know. I was sad for a little bit. But I really have it. You know, when you learn a new skill, you want to practice it, and you want to teach, show everybody else, you want to teach. And first and foremost, I'm a professor, I'm a teacher, I'm a mentor, I teach. So one of my friends, this is the value of network, one of my friends said, not to worry, Josie, don't feel depressed. I have a slot for you on the board at KQED. I said, what am I going to do at KQED? He says, you'd be perfect. You have a law background, you're interested in social justice, you know, you can put your fundraising skills to work. I said, well, okay then. That's what I'll do. So I went back to my office all happy. I said, you don't have to worry. I won't go after your job. I'm going to go out and learn how to raise money somewhere else, and I'll go after someone else's job. So he was relieved. Anyways, I went off to KQED, and from KQED, then the San Francisco Ballet, came calling, I became a trustee, Mills came a calling, the list goes on. You can read it in my bio. Everywhere I went, people were fascinated with my interest in raising money. Because it was something that was needed. So I'm here to tell you, look to your church, look to your communities, look to your children's schools, look to your alma maters. Try to find a way that you can apply that skill, whether it's writing grants, whether it's raising money with private donors, whether it's campaigns, but you're going to need it no matter what. It's always going to help you. It's a skill, kind of like learn how to invest your money, same type of a skill. So, number two, be not afraid to take risks, assess your leadership skills. Now, the be not afraid part is very important. I've been telling you, I've been walking down this memory lane with you, telling you how I've done things, why I did things. Sure, I was scared. Sure, I was afraid. Sure, I was thought, what are they going to think? What are they going to say? They're going to think, what is this? Who is she? But I was more afraid of not succeeding. More afraid that I wouldn't be there to serve as a role model for my community and for other women and for other people that did not have the opportunities that I've had. That was my greater fear. When I was inaugurated as Marian, at the time he was Archbishop, Timothy Dolan. Timothy Dolan was the Archbishop at the time. And he went on to become, as you know, Cardinal New York. And now he's going to be giving the Mass for the new Pope this week. And his theme for me was be not afraid. Well, of course, when he said that, I said, well, I can relate to that. It's been sort of my life, objective. But I said, why did you choose that for me? Be not afraid. He says, do you know where you've landed? I said, in Wisconsin. That's where I grew up. He says, in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Your whole theme, and I've studied you and I've watched you, is pushing access, pushing diversity, pushing for the have-nots. Some might even say you're a Democrat. Only because Nancy Pelosi went and said it, huh? If you give me an award way back and I put it in my Vita. So, yes, it looks like this. And that's fine. Proud of it. Anyway, he said, so you're going to have to just be not afraid. You're going to push for diversity. You're going to push, and not everyone is going to be happy with you. And that certainly turned out to be true. Not everyone was. Understanding of why diversity is so important. And then, of course, I developed an 8-point program around diversity and hired the first vice president for diversity and inclusion. And by the way, President Berkeley, at the time the board is being hired, and so I just took that beautiful job description and I just tweaked it a little bit and put it out there in Wisconsin, in the middle of nowhere. When the VP came along, Zenobach, Abebe, said, President Blaster Donald, I was just noticing that. My job description looks just like the one at UC Berkeley. I said, no. I wonder why. Anyway, back to number two. Number three, stewardship is a privilege. Career guidepost for me. The leadership positions we hold come with a responsibility to mentor others to succeed us. Succession planning. That's why I do the work that I do all over the country, helping to promote women and people of color into leadership positions. I just came back from ACE, and we had a big session called Moving the Needle. Why is it moving the needle? To this date, of over close to 4,000 university presidencies and college university presidencies, only 26% are women. That needle has not moved. So what are we going to do to move it forward? We have to help others to move forward. Only 13% of the presidents are people of color. 13%. We moved a little tiny bit. And for Hispanics, it's gone down. It's gone down. So we have lots of work to do in terms of stewardship. So those of us that are here in this room, those of us that are listening on the telephone, the work that we do is important. But even more important is how we mentor others, how we help others, how we push others along, how we take a risk for others. Because not everyone's going to have the types of privileges that we have. Stewardship is a responsibility. It's a privilege. It's an honor. It's like a sacred trust. I get a little passionate about that because I know that so many of you already are doing that, and so many more of you will be doing that. Just in summing up, I could talk on forever. I want a lot of time for questions, important messages. For me, my first important message, family comes first. I came back here to California to be with my husband and with my family. And my daughters to this day say, you came back for me. And it's true. I did. When my parents had the nine of us, and by the way, all nine of us, by the grace of God, are still alive. And we're still, you know, jumping around and doing what we need to do to support our families and to make it well, good for others. It's all a message that always been from my father. He used to always say, mija, which means my daughter. Make sure that the person to the right of you and to the left of you is a better person. He's gone now. He's in heaven for having met you. But his words always stay with me. Always. Number two. This is so important. Nurture your friends. Nurture your friends. They're priceless. As you're going up the corporate ladder, the academic ladder, your career path, there are those valuable, precious friends. Reach out to them during holidays, during their birthdays, when they're sick, when important things come up in their life. Nurture them. They're going to always be there with you if you nurture them. They nurture you in return. A day doesn't go by that I don't get a call. I know, because my husband knows them all. The calls come in. Oh, hi, Bernice. Hi, Shirley. Hi, Mary. It's really important. And now, of course, there are men that call me, too. So he says, excuse me, who is this calling? Who are you? But they're clients, and they also and friends. Number three, last. I'm very proud of being a Rotarian. What really struck with me, you know, you've all read the book, Servant Leader, but the Rotarians have a special motto that I really value, and that's service above self. And so service above self in the community, service above self as you're doing the work that you're doing, your volunteer work is very important. But it's all about, you know, being in the service of others. And for me, those are my three important messages. Family comes first, nurture your friends, service above self. And if you follow, at least this is what I've done, if you follow that type of those types of messages and themes, they seem to all, even when you get off course, you come back in. It's that moral compass that we all have, that we all need to help us continue to go forward. Finally, I say to you, I return today, and that now you know why it was important for me to return to Berkeley to create this ELA program for all of us and for others to succeed us. And all these national programs that I talked about are all wonderful programs. They're all value-added, and they're wondrous because they'll help you. And then as you go to these programs, come back and teach others. Replicate what you've taught, what you've been taught, so that others can learn. They maybe can't afford to go to some of these wonderful programs. You know, at the end of the day, we think about how do we invest our time? How do we plan for the succession of our positions and for others? How do we go about making sure that this world is a better place than we found it? And it's a very individualized process. It'll be different for Mary than it was for me. It'll be different for Judy. You know, oftentimes colleagues ask me, and I'm different for Doris, so I've reconnected with our kids, went to school, they had Roy School together. It's an individual process, but it's an important process. And then take time to reflect and to share and to care. Because in this world, in the limited time we have in this world, what's the most important is what are we leaving behind as a memory of our time here? Muchísimas gracias. Thank you. Now you can put me on the hot seat. Questions? Yes. One wonderful question. It's actually it's a. Oh yes, you got to stand up and give your name. Where you're from? Thank you.
Elise Martinez. I worked at UC Berkeley for 22 years. Now I'm also the president of Health Science Services.
No, thank you for the question. Well, you're in for a treat. In the original design of this program, it was the way we first thought about it, conceived it. The American Association of Hispanics in Higher Education one day brought us presidents together, Latino presidents, I think there were six at the time of university presidencies, and said, you know, what's needed out there? And we all said we need more leadership training. Get them ready for presidencies and chancellorships. And so I spoke up. I said, we need it. So then Louis Olivas, who's the president of the organization, said, Josefina, great, you do it. I mean, just go to Stanford, go to Texas. One of these institutions will help you create it. And I said, are you kidding me? I got to go back to Berkeley if I'm going to go anywhere. Why would I go to Stanford to do this, although they're a wonderful institution? So when I came to Berkeley, it was with the idea that we created for the next level. A funny thing happened on the way to creating the program. When we started out getting the applications, there were many, many people that applied that were emerging leaders, emerging executives. And there were people that were executives, and then they were already executives. So you're talking about three different groups. People that were emerging executives, directors, executive directors, people who were thinking about leadership. Then there were the executives who were deans. Then there were the senior executives who were already at the provost, vice presidential level. So we decided to take a chance. We said, okay, let's just do an experiment. So first year, let's include some emerging leaders, because after all, they are the ones that are going to lead the next 10 years. And then we did a really intensive evaluation at the end of the program. We asked the others that were already executives and seniors, how did you feel about having the emerging executives? You know what they said? One of the best parts of the program. Because we're able to mentor them as others are mentoring us. Because we have 27 faculty members, and most of them are presidents and chancellors and provosts. And so there's a nice group that gets, you know, networked together. And so then we decided to do it the second year as well, and it worked out perfectly. And we're always evaluating, always, you know, tweaking it, percolating, adding new things. And so this year we're going to do it again. So one-third of the people who are attending ELA this year will be once again emerging executives. And one-third will be executives and one-third will be senior executives. Okay? At all levels. And they come from all over the world. We have five from South Africa this year. They're going to be doing a presentation on South Africa. We're really excited because this is the first year we've done this. And Mary, you're welcome as an alum. Kissman, listen in. They are very, very thrilled because remember in South Africa they had merged two great institutions. Remember because of what happened in South Africa? So they're very excited about sharing their story about how to work with the multicultural environment. And that's an international focus. So that, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Yes. You can fill out the application online. Yes. Other questions? I answered all your questions? It's only 10 to 1. Yes. You got to stand up.
My name is George Zamora. I'm a policy program analyst in student affairs. My question to you is concerning other people who tell you you can't do it. It's not your place. You're not skilled enough. You don't have the right experience. It's not your place. It's not the right protocol. How do you deal with moving forward in that kind of environment?
George, right?
Yes.
May I call you George?
You may.
You call me Josefina. You know, that happens every day to me. I love it. I do. I've got two witnesses right here. Charisma, does that happen to me?
Yes.
And what do I do?
You accept the challenge. And you
find strategic ways to make it happen.
Excellent.
You're not saying
it against
me.
Yeah, go ahead.
She accepts the challenge and she finds strategic ways to make it happen.
Yay! Thank you. I won't ask my husband because he'll be here for 10 minutes. Anyway, that's exactly right. It is a challenge, and I do figure out strategically how to make it happen. But what I also do, in addition to that, is I round up supporters. Whenever someone says to me, "You can't do this, it can't happen," I round up supporters some way so that I'm not alone in the presentation again. Let me give you an example. Most recently, I gave this presentation. I said, wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to push a button so that, let's say you, George, want to go to an executive leadership program. If you could push a button and you put in what you're looking for, and boom, out would pop all the leadership programs in the country and where you could go, how much they cost, and the time of year, how they would fit. Would you like that?
That would be wonderful.
Okay, well, it's not there now. That is sort of, peddling all over the country. People can say, oh, it's going to cost too much. No, it's not going to happen. You're asking for too much. So you know what I've done every time someone says, no, we can't do it? I've already figured out strategically the supporters. And my hope is that, with the help of ACE, Mary, you're on the committee. The hope of ACE, because ACE is different and they don't have the time, and some people say they don't have the money. But if I find some people who have the time and some people who have the money, then it can happen. Because wouldn't that be wonderful? Well, so I went to the executive search firm. The executive search firm is going to benefit them if they know where all you are. Right? And how will they know where all you are? Well, they'll find out when you go, here I am. And so they're interested, and they have money. It would be a benefit to them. So my hope is that this will evolve. I wanted Berkeley to do it. I went to Berkeley, of course. Berkeley, could you do it? And Berkeley said, well, who else could possibly do it besides us? And so my hope is that Office of Presidents, there'll be other offices, other UC campuses, and maybe I will go to Stanford University. Okay. You want to join us making this happen? So I'm using that as an example and what I'm doing to make it happen. But try to get supporters, try to get allies, and try to also position yourself. Everything that I've talked about today, if you remember anything, it's about positioning. It's about strategically laying out how to make it happen, right? So, and I got to tell you, I love it when someone says I can't do something. Why do you think that is, George?
As Charisma said. You love the challenge.
I do. He doesn't take no for an answer.
He's still trying to mark me and stuff, my father used to always say, with the nine of us, he used to say, Leha, you're in charge. And anything goes wrong, you're to blame. And I said, Baba, what if when things go right? He goes, well, then I get the credit. I'm the boss. Thank you, George. Other questions back here?
I have a question.
Yes.
My name is Jocelyn Sirlipinaria.
Can you say your
name? Jocelyn Sirlipinaria. I met her when I was Jocelyn Sirlipinaria. I was a student, and she was a director at the Clayton Center at Cal. So when I saw her at Sacramento again, it was nice to see her and her career. Yeah, it's inspiring. My question is, after I heard your talk in Sacramento, and now, you talk about going away and coming back. Mm-hmm. I've made 10 years here, but not consistent. I went away, came back, went away, came back. Mm-hmm. Now, thinking about my career, maybe retiring here, but then you say, go away and come back. Some of us who've been here maybe like 10 years, we feel this, not as strong, but those golden handcuffs.
Mm-hmm.
You go away, they're going to change our benefits if we come back. Our retirement. So we don't feel stuck, but we feel challenged about really thinking about going away,
mm-hmm.
which is going away from UC.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of advice can you provide in terms of mustering up the courage to go?
Well, and I hope you understand that I'm not saying you have to go away.
Yeah.
You can stay here. You've got all these UC campuses, you have all these different
lot of opportunities within the UC system. And if that's the case, you know, I'm like, for example, I waited until I spent 18 years here if I could get an early retirement package. You know, I was really determined to get that under my belt. I didn't leave before that. When I left, I'm 65 right now. I was 50 when I left, 1998. That's when I left. But I waited for 18 years to make sure I got my package, make sure it was set up. But if there has been other opportunities for me here within the UC system or at Berkeley, you know, that would help my career path, I would have stayed. I would have stayed. But there wasn't. You know, I don't know how many of you have gone through these experiences, but I really wanted to get a reclassification. you all identify with that? I know it's really important to me. I really wanted to get a reclass. It just wasn't going to happen. The system was set up so it wasn't going to happen for my position and for the responsibilities I had. So I had to make a tough decision. But you may be in a different situation. You may be able to get opportunities here within the UC system, growth, promotion, reclassifications. Hallelujah. I think that's great. But no, don't feel a sense of urgency that you have to leave the UC system. You know, I love the UC system. I'm going back. You know, I'm at Berkeley now 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, running the Executive Leadership Academy. When I'm not running that Executive Leadership Academy, because remember, for recall, for people like myself, you can only work a certain percentage of time, right? And with good reason. We have to give opportunities for others. But when I'm not here, that's when I work with Archer Martin and Associates, the executive search firm, and I do my executive coaching. But so you can just stay here. You don't have to leave. Oh, no. You go when you're ready. But if you're going to stay here, look at those leadership skills. Make sure you're developing those leadership skills so that if you do have an opportunity that comes along, you'll be ready. Okay. You can relax now. You see? Other questions? No other questions? I answered all your questions, my goodness. Yes.
My name is Ann Geiger. I'm with Budget Capital Research here.
You're welcome.
You raised three kids, and your kids were young. Did you feel like the sort of focus on your career shifted? And you feel like sort of on and first in terms of balancing your family and career? I have two kids, so I'm eternally interested.
This is a really important question. Now, this is where my husband has to get a little bit of a break here. He's been consistently very supportive of helping with the children and managing, you know, how the time is done. But I do think, though, that when you're a single parent, I think that's a different story. That's when your support network becomes so important. And I also think that it's important for you, whether you're a gentleman or a lady, you feel comfortable in taking time out. Sometimes you have to take some time out. You will not have the time that you would like to devote to your volunteer work or to your research or to your writings or to your promotions. It's okay to take some time out and then go back in. It's a little bit different than the corporate America, the world of corporate America. They always say, well, you have all kinds of articles. You're going to read all the horror stories. Forget them. Focus on the stories, because they're true, but forget it. You know, focus on the stories of the role models and examples of women that have been able and men that have been able to do both. But I'm a big supporter of, you know, your circle of friends, your network. And I could not have done what I did without the support of my husband and the support of my three daughters. Because they helped, you know, take care of each other. I remember Charisma vividly when we had our second. There's 8 years between Charisma and my Alexa, my newly minted attorney in Wisconsin. And Charisma was so delighted that she found a sister 8 years, right? And I was busy with my career, and she would be busy trying to catch up with her to dress her up and put little bows on her, little dresses and whatever. And every time Charisma would be chasing after her, Alexa would go, no. And Charisma would go, Mama, you got to help me. She won't let me dress her. I said, try a little harder. Yes.
I'm Dina Bullard, Health Sciences and Services.
Dina.
Hi. How would you define emerging leader? Because we hear that all the time, emerging leaders. What does that mean sort of in the context of the UC system? Because, I mean, I think many of us can think of ourselves as emerging leaders, but how would you define that if you could?
As an emerging leader?
Emergent leader is someone who is interested in leadership positions, who's interested in accepting that on as a responsibility, and who's trying to assess how do you, you know, do. So, for example, let's say there's a committee opportunity, and if somebody says, well, who'd like to volunteer for this committee? Then your hand, you would go up. Once you get to the committee, who'd like to volunteer to chair this committee? Your hand would go up. Who would like to, you know, work to create this new program? Your hand will go up. When you're in the process of emerging as a leader, you will more often than not be asked for volunteer opportunities, and so you accept them. And sometimes you get tapped on the shoulder and say, you know, we've recognized this leadership quality in you. Would you be willing to take on this responsibility? And you say, yes, I would. So you're in the process of taking on more leadership and more leadership and developing your leadership skills. That's an emerging leader. An emerging executive is someone who's already, you know, in a leadership position, but who wants to continue to go up the ladder in terms of executive positions. So you may already be a director, executive director, department chair, you know, a head of a department, and you want to continue to go to the next level. Does that help you? So are you an emerging leader?
I'm always an emerging leader.
There you go. New self-definition. Okay, it's 1 o'clock. The bewitching hour is upon me. Us and me. I want to tell you again, thank you, and you have my contact information. I'm always available for any kind of, you know, calls or consultations, I want to just say what delight's been here. I mean, this is the first time that anyone in the UC system has said to me, either a birthday or here, come tell us about your journey. First time. So congratulations and thank you to all of you. Thank you.